it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Take a moment to introduce each of our three candidates, starting with Mr. Michael Gaynor, the independent candidate for Buffalo Mayor. Mr. Gaynor was born in Erie, Pennsylvania, where he raised horses and worked on his family's farm. He attended Penn State, where he studied to be a teacher. After college, his career path has included time as a wilderness EMT, a carpenter, a youth leader building trails in the Pacific Northwest, a teacher, activist, campaign manager, bed and breakfast owner, and school founder. He moved to Buffalo in November of 2005. He's a founding member of the East Side Parkways Coalition, the group fighting to restore the Humboldt Parkway. He's also the president of Buffalo Reuse, a community-focused nonprofit organization that seeks to improve the quality of life in Buffalo's neighborhood. He lives in Buffalo with his three children, and this is Mr. Gaynor's first time debating at St. Joe's. Welcome to St. Joe's, Mr. Gaynor. We also welcome back Mr. James Gardner, the Republican and Conservative Party nominee for Buffalo Mayor. Mr. Gardner grew up in Buffalo and is a graduate of American University in Washington, D.C., and the Levin College of Law at the University of Florida. He spent over 15 years working in the Erie County justice system, both as a prosecutor and as a law clerk. He was originally hired as an assistant Erie County district attorney and worked his way up through the local courts, trying everything from shoplifting to homicides in the city of Buffalo during his career there. After 7 years as an assistant district attorney, he served as a principal law clerk to Erie County Court Judge Kenneth Case, where he researched and wrote judicial decisions issued by the judge. He is now in private practice, working at the law offices of Ralph C. Lorgo. Mr. Gardner is an active community volunteer here in Buffalo, where he lives with his wife and their three children. And this is Mr. Gardner's second debate at St. Joe's, as he was here last year, as he endorsed Republican and Conservative candidate for the Erie County District Attorney's Office. Welcome back to St. Joe's, Mr. Gardner. And finally, we welcome back State Senator Sean Ryan, the Democratic and Working Families Party nominee for Buffalo Mayor. Senator Ryan is a graduate of SUNY College at Fredonia and the Brooklyn Law School. His legal experience includes work for Neighborhood Legal Services and the Legal Aid Bureau of Buffalo. After serving in the New York State Assembly from 2011 to 2020, Senator Ryan was first elected to the New York State Senate in 2020. He currently represents the 61st Senate District encompassing parts of the City of Buffalo, the City of Tonawanda, the towns of Amherst, Grand Island, and Tonawanda, and the villages of Kenmore and Williamsville. He resides in the City of Buffalo with his wife, Catherine Creighton, and their two daughters. This is also the second time that Senator Ryan has debated at St. Joe's, and we welcome you back, Senator Ryan. This morning, all of the debate questions have been developed and will be asked by our student panel, a group of five students from our AP government class. The young men on this year's panel are Gavin Collard, Ronan Cummings, Luke Hales, Owen Long, and Sal Ortolano. Our timekeepers this morning are Caden Gibson and Finn Daly. And our fact checkers are Michael Hershinov, Liam McDermott, and Marco Martino. The question and panel moderators are Mr. Patrick McHale and Mrs. Denise G. from the St. Joe's Social Studies Department. I now turn things over to our debate moderator, longtime social studies teacher at St. Joe's, and the moderator of the St. Joe's debate for the past 41 years, Mr. Ted Lina.
First of all, I can't believe I'm still here. There are bets on when I'm going to drop during the debate. First of all, I want to thank our candidates for taking time out of their busy schedules to be with us this morning and continue our proud tradition of political debates here at St. Joe's. In 2021, we hosted our last debate for Mayor of Buffalo. In 2022, we held a debate for New York State Senate, and Mr. Ryan participated in that debate. In 2023, we held a debate for Erie County District Attorney, and Mr. Gardner participated in that debate. The purpose of political debates has unfortunately gone by the wayside. Today, we're left with primarily political posts on social media, slick political commercials that offer very little regarding ideas. As a government teacher for many years, this is extremely disappointing to me. Recently, I had my AP students conduct a survey. We asked a number of voters throughout Erie County to name who represents them locally in a variety of positions, such as the State Senate, the House of Representatives, and who are the candidates for Mayor of Buffalo. Unfortunately, several had no idea who the candidates were. This debate offers candidates and potential voters an opportunity to actually learn something about the issues pertinent to their particular office. So, gentlemen, thank you very much for being here this morning. And I know that you probably have not debated with an audience this large, and I know it's nerve-wracking, and I know I'm always very nervous doing this, and I work here. Very quickly, I want to go over the format of this debate, and we just went over the rules in the conference room. So we will begin with opening statements from each candidate. There's three candidates, so it makes it a little bit harder. I asked one if they'd be willing to drop out of the race, because if I have two, it's easier. But they decided they would like to both remain on the ballot, and I think that's a good idea. So after their two-minute opening statements, all right, then they will be given a question from me, and they will be given 1 minute to answer a moderator question. We will then begin with a question from our AP students on the panel. A direct question each candidate is given a minute and a half for, and each candidate is given 45 seconds for a rebuttal. At the end of the direct questions, each candidate will be given, by the way, the same number of questions. They will each be given another moderator question, 1 minute, and then a closing statement by each candidate. So let's thank these three men for taking time out of a very hectic schedule for being here with us this morning, St. Joe's. All right, so we'll begin with our opening statement. Mr. Gaynor, based on a lottery we held earlier,
I picked the ace card, so that means I got the opportunity to go first. So thank you all, first of all, for this tremendous opportunity. You did something that I have been working tirelessly to make happen, which was to bring all three candidates together for our one and only debate. This will be our only televised debate in the first election in 20 years. So let me just say, I give you a round of applause for pure magic, because you did an amazing thing bringing us all here today. So thank you. I am not a politician. If you Google me and you look at some of my pictures on the internet, most of the time I've got a bandana on or work clothes or covered in sawdust. I've been a community organizer, I've been a not-for-profit manager, I've been a small business owner for the last 20 years. And I'm also someone that thinks creatively about how to solve problems. So when I first arrived here, and it's my 20-year anniversary here in Buffalo on November 1st, so I consider now Buffalo my hometown, the place where I've spent more years than I've spent anywhere else in my life. And the mayor, then Mayor Brown, the only elected mayor that I've known since I've been in Buffalo, was championing this idea to tear down 10,000 houses in 10 years, I thought to myself, there has to be a better way. And that's when we went to work. where I leaned into the community and the ideas and the perspectives of people that were here before me to start Buffalo Reuse, an innovative program that would salvage building materials and connected the dots in our communities to make materials available to people that needed those materials most to fix up their houses, to maintain, and to put things back into our community. Planting thousands of trees, transforming vacant lots into community spaces, doing things differently, trying to make it happen. And that is going to be my vision as the next mayor of Buffalo, to bring things together, to bring people together, to think outside of the box, to make change. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next opening remarks, Mr. Gardner.
Thank you very much. And thank you again for having me back in consecutive years. If I'm back another time, I've been told I need to buy a locker. I also won the lottery this morning because I not only have all of you staring at me, but I have Dr. Thompson staring at me on the podium also. So Dr. Thompson, thank you for allowing me the use of your podium this morning. The city of Buffalo is on the brink. We have could be a $60 million budget deficit. We have a rising crime problem with car thefts, residential burglaries, commercial burglaries. We have an affordability problem where rents are going up in our city, and yet we have oceans of vacant lot and vacant land in our city, probably the only city in America where that's true. We have a roads problem, potholes. Many of you are too young to drive, but as soon as you are, you've already ridden in the cars. And you've seen what our roads look like. Our roads aren't getting plowed when it snows. How are we going to lead our way out of this? This is the result of 60 years of one-party rule. I'm 41 years old. I've only known three mayors. This is the result of a lack of leadership, a failure of leadership, and a lack of accountability. Who is going to lead us out of this mess? Is it going to be the hand-picked candidate of the Democratic Party machine that has ruled this city for 60 years? The definition of insanity, ladies and gentlemen, is doing the same thing year after year, election after election, and expecting a different result. If we do not change the way we vote, how can we ever expect anything to change? We have a tremendous opportunity here. Thank you very much.
our next opening, Mr. Ryan.
Morning, everybody. I'm the son of a firefighter and a public school teacher. I learned about public service from my parents. I took that experience and became a lawyer, and as a lawyer, I worked for nonprofits, I worked in the private sector, I spent a lot of time with women and families who are facing illegal evictions, people who are victims of housing discrimination, young children with disabilities who weren't getting services from their school districts. I also did work on community redevelopment on the west side of Buffalo, and I spent some time working for Erie County, helping to form the first budgets after the red-green budget experience. I had over a 20-year career as a lawyer before I became an elected official. I've served in the New York State Assembly. I've served in the New York State Senate. I have the public sector, the private sector, the governmental experience to lead the city of Buffalo. But I also have the relationships necessary with Erie County, with the state of New York, with the governor, to help move Buffalo forward. We have to be able to do two things in the city of Buffalo. We need to restore the basics, the services that should come to you without any thought. Potholes being fixed, streets being plowed, pools being open, community centers being vibrant. But at the same time, we need to take on the tough, seemingly intractable problems facing the city of Buffalo. Over 16,000 vacant lots, concentrated poverty in our African American community as a result of generations of redlining. We know how to do it. I have a housing plan to restore neighborhoods. I have a financial plan to get the city back on its feet. There's a lot of work to be done, but I am confident in my ability, based on my experience, to get the job done.
Thank you, Mr. Ryan. We will begin the debate with a moderator question. Timekeepers, each candidate will be given 1 minute, and there is no rebuttal. Buffalo, like many cities in our nation, has been a one-party town. Chester Colwall, a Republican, served as Buffalo mayor till 1965. So for the past 60 years, for better or worse, a Democratic mayor in conjunction with the Buffalo Common Council has made all the key decisions for the Queen City. As was pointed out during a lively Democratic primary for this office, there was a discussion with all that's gone wrong in Buffalo during the last administration. A large budget deficit, a downtown that lacks critical mass, a lack of affordable housing, poor schools, and a number of rundown neighborhoods that some believe have been ignored. Why should the electorate continue to support or not support the party that has been at the center of the decision making and has been made over the last several decades, when there have been so many issues raised by fellow Democrats? Mr. Gaynor?
Well, my response is simple. We don't. It's not, in this election, a choice between Democrats or Republicans. It's not black and white. We live in a political climate right now that is more divided than ever. And what we need is a leader, is an ethos, is a culture about bringing people together that acknowledges and recognizes everyone's strength and contributions, that leverages the value of our neighborhoods, the strength of our not-for-profit communities, the prowess of our philanthropic community to get things done collaboratively. I'm an independent candidate. I started my own ballot line called Restore Buffalo in honor of the effort to restore the Humboldt Parkway. Because what I learned through that experience is that common people coming together can create transformational changes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Gardner.
Yeah, Mr. Lena, they shouldn't. They shouldn't trust them. It's been 60 years of the same. Walk outside, drive down Genesee, drive down Broadway. Look at what one-party rule has done to this city. We used to be one of the richest cities in America. Now we're the third poorest. We lead the nation in childhood poverty. We've lost half our population. That's their track record. That's what they bring to the table. And all they've done is hand the mayor's office to the next man up. And if you read the newspaper and you listen to the news stories, that's all this election is about. It's not about who's going to deliver the best services to Buffalo. It's about rearranging the pieces on a chessboard. It's about moving up the rung on the political ladder. That's what this election is about for the Democratic Party. That's what you can expect. Another 4 years of neglect. They've had 60 years of this. Give me four.
Thank you. Mr. Ryan.
It's up to the people of the city of Buffalo to decide who they want to sit in the chair of the mayor's office. And I know after a long and bruising primary season, the people of the city of Buffalo took a good look at a lot of candidates. I was in that primary with five other people. We had vigorous debate. We traveled the city of Buffalo, and I came out on top in that process. And now, as we're running into the general election, the people of the city of Buffalo, many of them who chose the primary winner, they concentrated on experience, they concentrated on background, and they concentrated on plans to lead the city forward. I feel that my plans that I've put together, my unique experience and my background, and I'm the best choice to lead the city of Buffalo forward.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ryan. At this point in the debate, we will ask questions from our panel. They will have 1.5 minutes to respond. and then there will be a rebuttal for 45 seconds. I would ask the students to withhold applauding, too, because it interferes a little bit with the flow of the debate, and we would be grateful if you would applause at the end of the debate when the candidates have finished with their closing statements. Thank you very much. So our first direct question will go to Mr. Gaynor. Oh, I have down Mr. Gaynor for this. We're just going in order.
Thank you. According to Feeding America, nearly 21% of Buffalo residents are reported as being food insecure. Furthermore, according to data from the University of Buffalo School of Architecture and Planning, over 56,000 households in the city of Buffalo do not have access to a supermarket within a walkable distance and do not have access to a motor vehicle. Food deserts are a growing problem in the United States, particularly in urban areas with high poverty rates. What specific policies would you implement to address food insecurity and ensure equitable access to fresh food across all parts of the city?
Well, we're going to lean into some of the great assets that we have in this city right now. I had a great opportunity in the last week to meet with the proprietors over at Imperial Market over at Kensington and Bailey. These are folks that have prioritized doing business in high poverty neighborhoods, and they're doing it with tremendous results. And they have a vision to expand, to take their price, the opportunities to negotiate pricing and expand that to more communities in Buffalo. But they need our support. And what can the city of Buffalo do? We can fast track permitting and inspections. We can help identify spaces where they can utilize that and bring their low-cost services to a community. This is a Yemenese-run market that has been doing business on the east side of Buffalo for 20 years, and we would like to see them expand and support other community-supported agricultural models, like Market Groundworks Market Garden, that is a growing entrepreneurial venture at the corner of Leslie and Genesee in my neighborhood, not far from our store, that is transitioning vacant land into productive green space. It's doing local hiring. It has a local food market where you can come on Tuesday nights and buy local produce. And then we're going to look at how to expand pop-up markets, food markets, and corner stores like Rooted in Love on Fillmore Avenue, where they sell fresh produce directly to the neighborhood. We are entering a point right now where we need to be creative because the federal government has cut SNAP funding and we need to be better.
Thank you. Your rebuttal, Mr. Gardner.
Look, the issue here is generational poverty. That's what we're talking about when we're talking about food insecurity. That's what that's really the heart of the issue. And the only way that we're going to lift people out of generational poverty is to give them an opportunity to build wealth. And what's the easiest way to do that? Homes. We need to build homes in the city of Buffalo, not affordable rental units like they're building down at the and on Perry Street or anywhere else in the city of Buffalo. That seems to be all that we're building. That seems to be all that New York State is interested in building. We need to build affordable single family and double homes that will allow people to build the generational wealth that will permit them to lift themselves out of this generational poverty. That's how we're gonna solve the food insecurity crisis. It's by lifting people out of the crushing poverty that has plagued this city for far too long.
Thank you, Mr. Gardner. Mr. Ryan.
I think there's a real confusion about food insecurity. While the problem's acute in the city of Buffalo, we recently expanded the free lunch program in New York State to be universal because such a high percentage of students in suburban Buffalo were eligible for those programs. So now we have a universal free lunch program throughout New York State. But that just shows you how widespread food insecurity is. And the major program helping people get food on their tables is the SNAP program, what used to be called the food stamps program. And unfortunately, the proposals that were just voted on in Washington, D.C., are going to dramatically decrease food stamps for people, and it's going to make people more hungry. We need to have good federal actors to help us solve our local problems.
Thank you. Our next direct question from the panel goes to Mr. Gardner.
Mr. Gardner, President Donald Trump has deployed or talked about sending National Guard troops to cities across the nation, including in New York City, Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, and San Francisco, for what he calls lawlessness and out-of-control crime in these cities, as well as to aid ICE agents in cracking down on illegal immigration. Democratic mayors and governors have called Trump's federalization of the National Guard an overreach. In addition, a federal court has found that Trump's use of the Guard around LA without the authorization of Congress violates the Posse Comitatus Act. New York Governor Kathy Hochul stated, "Our policies are working. We don't need National Guard troops." Supporters of the National Guard being deployed in Buffalo have pointed to the city's high violent crime rates. The Buffalo Police Department has reported higher rates of violent crime than the respective departments of New York City and Washington, D.C. Mr. Gardner, as mayor of Buffalo, would you support or oppose the usage of National Guard troops in the city if called for by the president?
I love that question, and let me tell you why. It shows the hypocrisy of Kathy Hochul. She's going out there saying that we don't need the National Guard in New York State. And what did she do in New York City last year and the year before? Put the National Guard in the New York City subway system, because she knew then what every New York City resident knows is that the subways are dangerous. She deployed the National Guard to New York City. She invoked that ability to protect citizens in New York City. If that opportunity is available to me as the mayor of Buffalo to help tap into additional resources to make our city safer, you bet I'm going to avail myself of it. If it's good enough for New York City by Kathy Hochul, it's going to be good enough for the city of Buffalo under James Gardner. We have, as your question directly alluded to, we have a crime problem. Part of that crime problem is people don't feel safe. There's a perception of insecurity, a perception of a public safety disaster. And how do we address it? It's through visibility. If people see officers on the beat, if people see officers in neighborhoods, they know that's going to, one, build trust between those citizens and those law enforcement officers, and it's going to give people a sense of security. I'm not in favor of calling in a SWAT team to hold down entire neighborhoods. But if the federal government is willing to give us additional resources to make our city safer, I'm grabbing it with both hands.
Thank you. Mr. Ryan, your rebuttal.
Here's how it's supposed to work. If a city is facing unrest or natural disaster, the city calls the governor and says, "Can you help us to send New York State National Guard troops here?" But here's how it is working. It's Republican MAGA nonsense, where the President of the United States is sending Guard troops from different states to other states over the objections of their governors without any input from the locals to patrol their streets. Never happened in America. It's pure political theater. If the federal government wants to send resources to Buffalo, I would welcome those resources to help fix our roads, to help fix our sewers and water systems, to help feed our hungry families. There is a lot the federal government could do for the city of Buffalo. Sending troops here is not one of them.
Thank you very much. Mr. Gaynor, your rebuttal.
This is an example of finger pointing from both sides about what's best and what's wrong. Kathy Hochul, MAGA this, MAGA that. That's not what's important, folks. What's important is addressing the needs of our communities. What are our small businesses here in Buffalo saying? What are our community residents here saying? What they want are safe communities. What our young people need are opportunities and mentoring. I've had the opportunity to work with young people that many people label as the bad kids, the ones that are out there creating troubles in our neighborhoods. And what we need to do is create opportunities for them. I support the idea of more foot patrols in our neighborhoods, but I also support more community services and more community service personnel in our neighborhoods, addressing social service issues.
Thank you. Our next direct question goes to Mr. Ryan.
Mr. Ryan, in 2019, New York eliminated cash bail and pretrial detention for most misdemeanors and nonviolent felonies, requiring judges to impose the least restrictive release conditions and without considering public safety risk. Then Erie County DA John Flynn had already curtailed bail requests, reducing jail population by nearly 50%, while a Buffalo News review of 11,672 local cases found fewer arrests for violent felonies among those released under the new guidelines. Critics, chiefly law enforcement, warned that limiting judicial discretion endangered communities. However, the 2022 murder of Kiara Benefield by her husband, who had been released on cashless bail for non-bail eligible offenses under the previous guidelines, prompted legislative amendments expanding bail eligibility and judicial options. Yet defense advocates argue judges remain unduly constrained. Should New York grant broader judicial discretion to impose bail or deny release based on public safety in cashless bail cases?
So before the 2019 reforms, the holding center was full of young people, mostly African-American males, who could not pay a very small amount of bail to be released. As an attorney, I represented a lot of these folks. They would sit in jail for 4, 5, 6, 7 days, come to the judge for their first appearance, and the judge would say, "Why are you in jail?" And they would say, "Because I couldn't put a $100 bond up." The judge then released these people. So right now, our holding center population is down by over 50%. That's a good thing. We shouldn't criminalize poverty. It shouldn't be that if somebody with money to make bail for shoplifting gets to walk out after their parents post bail, but a kid who can't afford it has to stay in the holding center for a long period of time. That's not justice in America. That's not the justice we want. We made a lot of changes since 2019. The best public policy is public policy that evolves. You don't get stuck in thinking you're right. So we made changes several times since 2019. We may not have got it perfect in 19, but we got it right.
Thank you. Mr. Gaynor, your rebuttal.
And I think what we have to do is differentiate between nuisance crimes and violent crime. And I think that we empower our courts to make those decisions and differentiate between that and hopefully act in good faith in accordance with the law. But as the next mayor of Buffalo, my administration has a commitment to community and to our young people and to investments in those communities that keep our communities safe. Our shopkeepers, our small business people are worried about the safety and break-ins of their business. They're worried about people that are mentally ill and homeless and have drug addiction. We have to put social service workers and first responders that are equipped to deal with those issues on our streets so that our police can address nuisance crime and violent crime the way that they are intended to.
Thank you. Mr. Gardner, your rebuttal.
It goes way beyond that. And Mr. Ryan knows it because he not only voted for that bail reform legislation, he supports it today. He voted for the discovery rules changes. He voted for less is more, which is an easy way for parolees to get out of jail, to get out of prison, and remain unaccountable to the criminal justice system. He voted and supported the Raise the Age legislation that has made it almost impossible for members of law enforcement in Buffalo and New York State to hold criminals accountable. And that is the reason why we are seeing the uptick in not only the nuisance crimes, not only the burglaries and the vandalism, but it's why we're seeing not only Kiara Benefield, who lost her life, but also the young woman on North Ogden Street, who just this year was murdered because of bail reform.
Thank you very much. Our next direct question goes to Mr. Gaynor.
Mr. Gaynor, in December 2022, the city of Buffalo suffered a catastrophic blizzard, killing 31 people in the city limits and shutting down roads for days. A 2023 New York University report found Buffalo's inadequate government response exacerbated the already disastrous situation. Specifically, the city's plowing, warming centers, and communication did not meet the needs of residents. The reports also found the city issued inconsistent and confusing warnings of weather severity and street closings, leading citizens to venture out into dangerous conditions. What do you think were the biggest mistakes during the blizzard, and what steps would you take to prevent them from occurring again?
I think it's a combination of prevention and intervention. And we have to be proactive in our response. We need to make sure that there is salt accumulations and stocks in store for our storms. We need to make sure we have equipment ready to go and that's out there early and often when there's a storm. And then we need supportive services for our community to make sure that people have cover, that have protection from the elements. And then our first responders can appropriately respond to those. I was the son of the superintendent of highways in Erie, Pennsylvania. I spent time on plows. I spent time in inclement weather. And it is a systematic approach to how we facilitate city services to ensure that we are proactive and that we're getting the job done to keep our neighborhoods safe, so that every resident has a place to take cover, to get support, and it's what my administration is about. It's about creating a culture of care, where we take care of every resident in our community, regardless of their neighborhood, regardless of their community that they live in, regardless of their church or affiliation, we take care of everyone. I don't care if you voted for me, if you're a Democrat, if you're a Republican, we solve problems together.
Thank you. Mr. Gardner, your rebuttal.
Yeah, it's a lack of leadership. You know, what's changed since that storm to today? Do we have any confidence as a city that the same result wouldn't transpire today if we got hit with a storm like that? We shouldn't. They've done nothing to give us that confidence, to give us that assurance that anything has fundamentally changed. We don't have the plows. We don't have the plows to plow our streets properly. We don't have enough salt. We don't have enough mechanics to keep those plows running. It's a lack of resources in the key spots. That's why when I say we have to right-size government, it's not about slashing and burning. It's about making sure that we're investing in the areas that we expect as a city those resources to be invested in. It's about making sure that we have the plows, make sure we have the salt, and hold me accountable when it doesn't go right.
Thank you very much. Mr. Ryan, your rebuttal.
So the deaths in that storm were tragic, but they were entirely preventable. Nothing is more basic than being able to keep your citizens safe in the event of natural disaster. At the time of that storm, 30% of Buffalo's snowplows were not functioning. They couldn't get them out of the barns. I represent Tonawanda, Amherst, Grand Island, areas that got more snow during that storm. No one died in those communities. No one died in those communities because the plows were able to get to people. National Grid was able to come in and restore power. Ambulances were able to come in to help people who are in medical need. National Grid had people stationed on the borders of the city of Buffalo waiting to come in to restore power. It took days and days to get in because the city could not perform one of the basic functions, and that is plowing its streets.
Thank you very much. Our next direct question, Mr. Gardner.
Earlier this year, Mayor Scanlon's administration uncovered a structural deficit of more than $70 million for the 2025 to 2026 fiscal year, stemming in part from years of flat property tax rates and rising fixed costs. The adopted budget limited overtime funding, deferred wage increases from understaffed police and fire departments, and capped health insurance growth at levels well below national averages. Projections now suggest next year's deficit may decline to $25.7 million, though the Buffalo Fiscal Stability Authority warns that multiple years of property tax increases may be needed to achieve long-term balance. Meanwhile, Erie County Executive Mark Pullencars has cautioned that President Trump's One Big Beautiful Bill Act passed this summer could further strain local budgets by reducing federal support to counties and cities across western New York. If elected mayor, how would you manage Buffalo's ongoing budget challenges transparently and responsibly while preparing the city for the potential economic effects of these new federal policies?
So, the reason that we're in the budget mess that we're in is because the city of Buffalo has a spending problem. Expenses have grown. It's not just rising fixed costs. Expenses have grown 30% over the past 2 years that we have audited numbers for, and a lot of that is in patronage jobs. The city of Buffalo was a beneficiary of a huge amount of federal money out of COVID. And what did they use it for? They used it for hiring people, and they used it for plugging budget deficits. They didn't use that money to invest in the city at all. They didn't do anything to grow our tax base with those funds. So raising taxes, to me, is one of the last things that we should do, because all it does is erode our comparative advantage with our surrounding municipalities. Buffalo remains a lower tax area within Erie County and within New York State. That is something that will attract people to us. Right now, the option is raising taxes for services that don't exist. People are going to leave if you continue to to raise taxes without any kind of commensurate rise in services, that's only going to fuel the out-migration from the city of Buffalo itself. We have to start cutting our costs. And as mayor, I'm going to lead by example. We're going to cut $2 million out of the mayor's budget alone. And I'm going to challenge the Common Council to do the same. I don't need police protection 24 hours. I have an alarm system and a locked door. That's all I need. That's $1 million right there that we can save.
Thank you. Mr. Ryan, your rebuttal?
If someone tells you they're going to cut your way out of this problem, they're kind of shielding the truth from you. Health insurance goes up every year. Everything goes up every year. But the city of Buffalo maintained its flat taxes for 19 years. And the built-in expenses that the questioner noted, you can't control those. So last year's budget, you know, it didn't balance. We're going to end this year between $40 and $60 million. Taking $2 million out of one budget, okay, where's your other $38 million come from? So we have a lot of work to do in the city. We're going to have some efficiencies, but we also have to collect our outstanding revenues. We only collect 7% of outstanding fines and fees in the city of Buffalo. We have $20 million in arrears on our water bills, but we're going to have to deal with our state partners in order to get this
done. Thank you very
much. And I have the experience in Albany to help us bring in our state partners.
Thank you. Mr. Gaynor, your rebuttal.
It's about fiscal responsibility and equity in this case. I run my own business and have for the last 20 years. I have expectations of my department heads. I have roles and responsibilities that they carry out that I expect of them. During budgeting, it's not acceptable to spend in excess of what we budget. And yes, the city of Buffalo has done that for the last 6 years. Just in overtime expenditure alone in the last 6 years, we've spent $60 million in excess of what was budgeted. Right there is our shortfall. When we see that, when we know in day 30 or day 60 of the fiscal year that we are approaching that budget figure, we need to put on our thinking caps and think about how to best solve problems to make sure we're not cutting citizens short on services.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next direct question to Mr. Ryan.
Mr. Ryan, the Buffalo Police Benevolent Association has reported that, due to the lack of a new contract agreement, particularly concerning health care benefits, approximately 80 senior officers, including at least 20 lieutenants, may take early retirement if there isn't a new contract by the end of this year. This potential loss represents nearly 10% of the police force and raises concerns about staffing and public safety. Additionally, the current labor contract expired at the end of June, and the absence of provisions, such as the residency requirement, has already affected recruitment and retention efforts. As mayor, how would you address the ongoing contract negotiations and their impact on the Buffalo Police Department, specifically in preventing the loss of experienced officers and ensuring adequate staffing to maintain public safety?
So by mid next year, every contract in the city of Buffalo will be expired. Police, fire, blue collar, white collar, sewer, water. We have all those contracts to renegotiate, and it's really tough to renegotiate a contract when you have a deficit. So generally, you use money to help solve some of the problems. So we're going to have very tough negotiations, but we have to make sure we have contracts that don't build in overtime. That's the situation we're facing now. We're not down on people power in the firefighter and the police departments, but there's all these contractual provisions that make it so overtime just keeps going. Already this year, after quarter one, books are in, we're going to have exceeded our overtime already by $10 million. So the new contract has to include provisions that limit unnecessary overtime. And the other thing we have to do is the city of Buffalo has over 98 different healthcare contracts open right now. The administrative costs just on that is crippling. If you compare it to the county, who has less than a dozen. So we have a lot of cleanup to do in order to get the efficiencies that we need in the city of Buffalo.
Thank you. Your rebuttal, Mr. Gaynor?
So the first thing that we're going to do is we're going to assemble a world-class team. I'm not beholden to anyone. I don't owe anybody anything as an independent. So we're going to bring state-of-the-art decision makers, wise leaders to help inform the negotiation process. But we're also going to address the real needs of our police. Right now, they feel stretched. They can't respond effectively to violent crime, to nuisance crime, because they are stretched by all of the other competing needs on their plate. So we're going to leverage the funding and the support of our county and our state to bring more resources to the neighborhood level to ensure that we're responding and we're taking things off their plate, which will give us another tool as we negotiate with the police to get to those contract finals.
Thank you. Your rebuttal, Mr. Gardner.
Yeah, the first thing we're going to do is get to the table as soon as possible. A lot of the problems that are affecting the City of Buffalo Police Department, fire, and other unions is the... we have to negotiate a fair contract, one that's fair for them and one that helps control costs for the city. But the reason why those 80 officers are thinking about leaving is because they're worried about the imposition of a hard control board. And what that means to members of the Buffalo Police Department, Buffalo Fire Department, and other labor unions is a frozen step. Their wages don't increase over time. Their memorandums of agreement on health disappear. And Mr. Ryan's budget plan of how we're going to get us out of this mess is to borrow $150 million in deficit bonds without identifying any way to pay for it. How is that going to happen? With a hard control board, that's why they're getting out.
Thank you. Our next direct question to Mr. Gaynor.
Mr. Gaynor, on April 11th, 2024, Erie County Sheriff's Narcotics Chief D.J. Granville, while operating a county-owned Dodge pickup truck, collided with seven other vehicles. Responding Buffalo Police Department officers did not administer a field sobriety test, a breathalyzer, or a blood draw to Chief Granville. The incident was signed by a Buffalo Police Lieutenant, the supervising officer on the scene, and Chief Granville's sister-in-law. The matter remained undisclosed to the public until nearly 1 year later, when it was reported by WGRZ. At that time, the Buffalo Police Department stated that it was actively working on the case and declined to release related records, citing potential interference with criminal investigations or judicial proceedings. As mayor, what specific policies, oversight mechanisms, and accountability measures would you implement to guarantee that the Buffalo Police Department investigates and processes such incidents impartially and transparently, regardless of the individuals involved, positions, or personal connections?
Well, I think that that's a lot of the problem with our political system today, is a lack of accountability because of the concentration of power at City Hall, right? The concentration of power that takes power away from our communities, takes power away from regular people in their neighborhoods, trying to improve the quality of life in their neighborhoods. I have an initiative called Neighbors Building Neighborhoods, and what we are going to do is put decision making in the hands of people as in a council structure all across our city. From each of those councils, there will be one member that will serve on a police accountability and advisory committee that will further investigate these types of abuses, this type of nepotism, this type of patronage in our city. We need to decentralize power. We need independent voices coming to the table. We need to leverage every asset at our disposal to address the growing needs and concerns in our communities. If we're focusing on the power of a party, they are going to reward their loyalists. If we're focused on the power of a machine, they are going to pay back the people that paid them in the first place. Look at the money that was spent in this mayoral election alone. Probably close to $4 million to date. Who are those elected officials accountable to? Their funders, the unions, the families, or the people that live on every block in the city of Buffalo.
Thank you very much. Mr. Gardner, your rebuttal.
Sure. I believe that sunshine is the best disinfectant. You got to be open. You got to be transparent. People will not tolerate a justice system that, two different justice systems, one for police officers and one for everyone else. As a city employee, whether you're a member of the Buffalo Police Department or Buffalo Fire Department, you're going to be held to a higher standard. I can promise you that. But when it comes to the police in particular, it has never been easier to hold officers accountable. They all wear body camera. It happens in real time. We have video footage. It's never been easier to figure out whether an officer made a mistake or to exonerate an officer that's been falsely accused. And I'll work with the Buffalo Police Department and other departments to make sure that we review that footage in a timely fashion and we disclose it to the public where appropriate.
Thank you. Your rebuttal, Mr. Ryan.
I have a full criminal justice plan that talks about training, transparency, accountability. It's on my website. Take a look. But the two keys of any policing has to be transparency and accountability. In this case, the Erie County Sheriff's officer was not held accountable. The Buffalo police who responded were not held accountable. The sheriff's deputy was not treated like any other citizen who got into that accident. And the Buffalo police did not respond to that person like he was any other person. That destroys the community's confidence and faith in the police department. And transparency obviously wasn't hit. Sure, there's body cameras, but if they're not turned on, they're not helpful.
Thank you.
And if you try to bury these things out of the press's eyes, this only came to
Thank you very much. Thank you. By the way, so each candidate gets the same number of questions. This was your last direct question, and each of you will be given another direct question before we do the, go to closing remarks, okay? So our next direct question goes to Mr. Gardner.
Okay. Mr. Gardner, Channel 7 reports that there is a crisis of affordability in housing in Western New York, with the cost of homes and rent increasing in 2024. According to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, the majority of Buffalo's tenants have trouble paying their rent. 15% of homeowners and 42% of renters spent more than a third of their income on housing in 2024. This has a real impact on homeownership. The U.S. Census notes that about 43% of Buffalo's residents own their own homes compared to a national average of 65%. What would your administration do to address this affordability crisis?
Right now, we have a demand for housing and we have a supply of land. As mayor, it's going to be my job to make sure the supply meets the demand. The city of Buffalo's broke. We can't act as a developer the way the state does, the way that they've squandered millions and hundreds of millions of dollars on affordable rental units. But what the city can do is be an active participant at the table to make sure that we clear title to the available land. We can make sure that the city infrastructure is there to support development, not only of affordable single-family homes, affordable housing that are single-family homes, but we also need to start inviting private development into the city of Buffalo. Politicians up here are patting themselves on the back for the fact that they've got 47 or 57 affordable single-family homes in the city of Buffalo under construction. We need probably 500 under construction a year. The only way we're going to do that is to start leveraging private investment into the city of Buffalo. And that's the role as mayor that I will play. We have to certainly incentivize private development in the city of Buffalo. We're not going to be able to do it with money. We're going to have to be creative, but we have to do it. That's the only way that we're going to, one, solve the affordability problem, and two, lift this city out of the generational poverty doom loop that we've been in my entire life.
Thank you. Your rebuttal, Mr. Ryan.
Housing is the most important issue facing the city of Buffalo. I have a three-point plan. I had this funded through New York State. The first is to keep people in their apartments. That's the cheapest, the most efficient way. Second is we have 4,000 vacant units in the city of Buffalo in doubles, mostly owned by senior women. We have a program to give a $50,000 or $75,000 grant to get those units back online. More supply reduces costs, and most importantly and final, we have a program funded to build new singles and doubles on vacant lots throughout the city of Buffalo that'll be affordable to people making between $40,000 and $90,000 a year. The answer to our affordability crisis is to build more housing.
Thank you. Your rebuttal, Mr. Gaynor.
We have to build more housing, but we also have to address the needs of the housing that is already here in the city. landlords that have been able to maintain vacant structures for decades. We need immediate investments in that. Those are the shortest path to address our housing crisis. But we have to also have more rigorous and aggressive enforcement to ensure that irresponsible landlords aren't taking advantage of their tenants, so that we're improving the livability, the quality of our housing, and the livability of each neighborhood. That is what we need to do. Coalesce resources around improving quality of life on each block in the city of Buffalo.
Thank you. Our last direct question goes to Mr. Ryan.
The 2025 mayoral race follows nearly two decades under former Mayor Byron Brown, who became Buffalo's longest-serving mayor after winning five terms. This long period in office is frequently used by critics as an argument for limits on the number of years one elected official can stay in office in City Hall. Without term limits, politicians can hold on to office for decades, focusing more on elections than the people. To combat this, New York City and Syracuse have limited the number of terms one person can serve as mayor. Reformers see term limits as a way to increase accountability in city government and end what they see as entrenched political dynasties. Mr. Ryan, do you support term limits for mayor, and how can voters trust that the government stays accountable if without them?
We all like the framers of the Constitution, and they all talk about people being elected by their peers. Nothing in that document talks about term limits. They talk about the people in this room, you vote, you decide who your leadership is. Term limits, the whole argument has run hot and cold over the years. But I'll tell you this, New York City would have been a heck of a lot better with one more term of Michael Bloomberg, and Syracuse would be a heck of a lot better with one more term of Ben Walsh. So there's examples of good long-term leadership. There's examples of bad long-term leadership, but there's also a lot of examples of very good leaders in cities having their time cut short because of arbitrary term limits.
Thank you. Your rebuttal, Mr. Gaynor.
We will work every day to pass term limits in the state of New York and in the city of Buffalo, because when people are allowed to stay in office for 20 years, it limits people's participation and voice and stake in government and decision-making. 98% of the elections in the city of Buffalo, that's 126 elections, were won by incumbents. The Democratic Party has a stranglehold on this city. We need to open the doors to more people. We need open primaries to allow more third-party independent people to get involved in the electoral process, to restore hope in our democratic system so that more people are engaged in decision-making, before more people believe that their voice matters.
Thank you. Your rebuttal, Mr. Gardner.
I don't think there could have been a less surprising answer from the Democratic nominee to the mayoralty of the city of Buffalo that he's against term limits. Of course we need term limits. The best example of it is to walk outside. Look at the city of Buffalo. Look at what 60 years of one-party rule has given us. That's why you need, we're a poster child for term limits. We need any and all available options, creativity, infusions of new ideas and new blood to get us out of this cyclical doom loop that the city of Buffalo has been on for the past 60 years. I will do work every day to make sure that we have term limits. I think it's a fantastic idea. I think that's how we, in the face of single party rule, that's the only way we can achieve accountability.
This is a very controversial topic. As I'm sure everyone knows here, we do have term limits for president, two terms or 10 years, but that is based on a constitutional amendment. There are no limits for the House or Senate. We do not need to amend the city charter, however, to ask you this question, because this happened in the 90s when the Republicans were in charge, and they said they would support term limits, and then, of course, whenever the party is in power, they have a change of heart. So I'm going to ask each of you gentlemen, put you on the spot, 20 seconds, please. Would you pledge, if elected the next mayor, and one of these men will be the next mayor of Buffalo, would you pledge to serve no more than two terms in City Hall, Mr. Gaynor.
I have told my supporters and I've told people in every community that I've been campaigning that I have 8 years to elevate leaders to bring more voices into the political process to make significant transformational change in the city of Buffalo. We do that all together. Not we, not them, us. That's what I'm running for here in the city of Buffalo.
Thank you, Mr. Gardner.
Give me 4 years, but I'll gladly take 8.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Ryan.
I'm pretty clear. I don't support term limits. I think the voters are the people who decide, and the voters are the ones who judge you. I've been through a lot of elections, and I think that's the way to do it, is have elections.
Thank you very much. I will now ask one last moderator question, and then we will have closing statements from each of our candidates. I began the debate with one-party rule in Buffalo, New York. I also want now to address the national issue, where we have a similar situation, of course, excluding the Supreme Court of the United States, but in regard to Buffalo, the mayor and council, and in regard to the national level, the mayor and the president of the United States in the House and Senate. At the national level, we have one party currently in control in the House and also in the United States Senate and the White House as well. A number of decisions have been made regarding our current national government, such as shutting down immigration, taxes, the reduction in cabinet-level positions, such as the Department of Education, the proper use of the National Guard and federal agents, such as the DEA, FBI, ICE, etc. Do you primarily support or oppose anything that I've just mentioned that's occurring at the national level? Mr. Gaynor, they have 1 minute if they would like to use that time.
I primarily, in general, oppose federal oppressive action against local city governments. I think that each city, each neighborhood, each community is in the best position to support what they think is best in their home community. And when we have outside control and influence, it disempowers people, it makes people feel unsafe in their own homes, in their own communities, and my administration will champion a culture of care where we build resilience, we build support, and we build a community that cares for one another. That's what my commitment is. Outside of that, the federal government's gonna do what we need to do, but we need to stand up for people.
Mr. Gardner?
My commitment is to work with every level of government. When I win this election, I'm going to have to deal with Kathy Hochul. I'm going to have to deal with Mark Poloncarz. I'm going to have to deal with Donald Trump. I'm going to work with all of them, even though there are key differences that I have with each of them. I'm going to do what needs to be done to better the city of Buffalo. I will work with every layer of government, every level of government, to make sure that the city of Buffalo gets the resources it needs, to make sure that we have what is best, advocate for the best programs that we can get for our city residents, and I will work tirelessly to make sure that this city is better. Whether or not I support what Donald Trump does today or Donald Trump does tomorrow, what Kathy Hochul does today or what Kathy Hochul does tomorrow, it's a shifting sand universe. What I will do is my pledge is I will work with each of them, even though I have fundamental disagreements with each of them.
Thank you, Mr. Ryan.
We hear about the dangers of one-party rule when it's a Democrat, but the one-party rule in Washington, I'm not hearing much of my MAGA friends out of that. One-party rule in D.C. and MAGA Trumpism has been awful for the nation, and it's been awful for the city of Buffalo. The MAGA Republicans are declaring war on Canada. It's killing our local economy. Buffalo's growth in the last 10 years was all based on new Americans. No more new Americans coming into the United States. Bad for Buffalo's economy. The trade war for Canada, bad for Buffalo's economy. University of Buffalo is an international institution. Attendance is down. Kids, the best and the brightest, can't come from around the world. Clearly, people distance themselves from the MAGA Republican in that agenda when it's good for them. But I tell you, the MAGA Republican agenda is bad for the city of Buffalo.
Thank you. We will now have closing statements. Each candidate will be given 2 minutes, and there will be no rebuttal. Mr. Ryan, you get to start off.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone, for being here today. Wonderful discussion. I'm going to build an administration in the city of Buffalo made up of the best and the brightest. We're going to recruit people from around the country. We're going to have open searches. Everything will be transparent. But we're going to bring good people with good qualifications into the city of Buffalo. I have the background, over 20 years as an attorney, private sector, public sector, nonprofit sector. I understand how our society works, how our culture works, how our government works, how the private sector works. But the most important thing I'm going to bring into the city of Buffalo is my relationships with New York State. We can't get out of this problem that we're in alone. We're going to need state help. We're going to need a soft landing. I served in the Assembly. I have good relationships there. I serve in the Senate now. I have good relationships there. I know Tom DiNapoli. We're going to bring him in to help us look at our books and have a good relationship with the governor. We're going to need those helps on every local and state level to help Buffalo out of this problem. I have those relationships, and I'm going to be the one who leads Buffalo to a brighter future because, after all, Buffalo deserves better.
Thank you. Mr. Gardner, you're closing.
Sean Ryan just gave you a laundry list of everybody that he knows in Albany because he's been there for 15 years. Why hasn't he done it now? Why hasn't he done it before? Where has this help been? State direct funding to the city of Buffalo has remained flat for the past 5 years, and we've got a $60 million budget deficit. He voted to send $12 billion with a B to New York City to help illegal immigration in New York City. He voted to make sure illegal immigrants get free college tuition. Free college tuition. If he has such great and powerful relationships with the people in power, why are we in a $60 million budget deficit now? Why are we the third poorest city in America? He wants you to believe that suddenly when he gets into the mayor's office, things are going to be different. Judge him on his record. He's been in office for 15 years. What has he delivered to the city? What has his party delivered to the city? We have a choice this election. You can either vote for 60 more years of the same, or give me four. Give me four to do what I say I'm going to do. Give me four to turn this city around, and if I don't do what I say I'm going to do, vote me out. That is the way this is supposed to work. That is how democracy is supposed to work. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Gaynor, your closing remarks.
So I want to just say that this experience, both here at St. Joe's and as a candidate running for mayor, has been the experience of my life. I have been involved in many aspects of our community as a business owner, as a community leader. I was involved in this effort to restore Humboldt Parkway when a bunch of the community came together to stand up, to stand up for and against a state project that had huge momentum. But the people came together to overcome that adversity together. They went and they raised money and they solved the problem. They held the DOT accountable. Judge Koliakovo's decision gave our city and our community another chance. That process of people rising to take control of their communities, to exert leadership and decision making, to give power back to communities, is what my administration stands for and will be about. We need to bring more power back to neighborhoods. We need to reject a two-party system that closes doors on our communities, that closes doors to decision-making and innovation. And we need to invite more people to the table to be part of solutions. that empower residents, that educate and mentor young people, that re-green our city, that get people excited and passionate and hopeful for a future where they can start a family, start a small business, be a part of something transformational. That is why I ran for office, so that I could bring voice to the neighbors in my neighborhoods that have been for 20 years neglected in this city, so that I could bring my experience as a problem solver and as an innovator and as a creative thinker to the forefront of this conversation to make long-term transformational change here in the city of Buffalo that we will all be proud of. Thank you.
I want to, first of all, thank our candidates and St. Joe's. This morning I was interviewed by WBEN and they asked Mr. Lina, how is it that you're able to get debates that the media is not able to get? You know why? You. 41 years. It didn't start out like this. What you listened to this morning is what politics is all about. The exchange of ideas, not labels. So I want to thank you, and I want to thank each of our candidates. And before we present them with a small token of our appreciation, Mr. McHale, Mrs. Gee, myself, we're already looking at next year, excuse me. I don't know who will be back, but next year we have a major statewide race. We've done pretty much every local race here, but we've never done governor of New York. Next year, we have a Western New Yorker, Kathy Hochul, running for governor. I would love for St. Joe's to host a gubernatorial debate. And if not here, where would be a better place to hold it? We have 41 years of experience. So Ms. Hochul, I'm inviting you to debate here next October. We can discuss the day and the time. And I hope to see you here next October.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.